Black Museum.
Affiliated stations present Escape.
Hall of Fantasy. Inner Sanctum Mystery.
Lights out.
Murder at midnight. The Sealed Book.
Presents Suspense.
Welcome, Weirdos! I'm Darren Marlar, and this is Retro Radio Sunday on Weird Darkness. Each week I bring you a show from the golden age of radio, but still in the genre of Weird Darkness. I'll have stories of the macabre and horror, mysteries and crime, and even some dark science fiction. If you're new here, welcome to the show, and be sure to subscribe or follow the podcast so you don't miss future episodes. And if you're already a member of this weirdo family, please take a moment and invite someone else to listen in with you. Spreading the word about the show helps it to grow. And if you're here because you're already a fan of nostalgic audio and print, you'll want to email weirddarkness@radioarchives.com. When you do that, you'll get an instant reply with links to download full-length pulp audiobooks, full-length pulp ebooks, and old-time radio shows absolutely free. That's WeirdDarkness@RadioArchives.com. Coming up, it's an episode from Mystery is My Hobby. First aired between 1945 and 1947, Mystery is My Hobby, which Mutual originally broadcast as Murder is My Hobby, is a good example of a typical mystery series from radio's golden age. Glenn Langan stars as mystery writer Barton Drake, author of both short stories and a series of best-selling anthology books. Drake is a well-spoken sophisticate, fascinated by the ways of the criminal mind, and is intrigued by mysteries the same way that other hobbyists or anthologists, for instance, are intrigued with birds. His stories and books have given him a comfortable income, allowing him to freely pursue the details of whatever new case or crime may come his way. And come they do, on a weekly basis, with a seemingly endless array of robberies, shootings, suspicious deaths, damsels in distress, and unsolved murders to occupy his time and fascinate his interests. You can't help but wonder if maybe after 39 weeks in which every knock at the door, phone call, or chance encounter led to some form of mayhem or bloodshed, the poor fellow wasn't tempted to lock the doors, turn off his lights, and maybe hide under the bed just to get some relief. For modern audiences, who are used to watching graphic and bloody violence while dining off of a television tray in front of the tube, Mystery is My Hobby might seem a bit tame in comparison, but for those who enjoy hearing the details of an intriguing crime full of twists, turns, and drama, the series remains a pleasant and captivating way to spend a half hour or so in your personal theater of the mind. You'll find plenty of blackmail, suicide, theft, deception, poisoning, mystery, mayhem, and murder. Truly, who could ask for a more wholesome package of radio entertainment? Barton Drake is a pleasant, friendly, and knowledgeable fellow who's always willing to assist both perfect strangers and the police in solving some mystery or other, if only to fill his need for serviceable story plots. Some of his cases deal with the solutions to impossible crimes, dead men committing murder, for instance, but the majority are bread and butter for a radio detective. Basically, who's dead? Who done it? And how'd they do it? Now bolt your doors, lock your windows, turn off your lights, and come with me into the weird darkness as we listen to Mystery is My Hobby from 1949 and the story Snowbound.
Mystery is My Hobby. There had been a murder in the small country town of Menden. According to the newspaper accounts, the man who was at first believed to be guilty of the crime was allowed to go free, but no satisfactory reason was given. I reread the published stories and learned that on the evening of February 26th, a farmer named Walt Centrell was late for his supper.
That's you, Walt?
Yep, it's me.
Well, set the milk down in the shed and come into your supper. It's been on the table more than an hour. Walt?
All right, I'm a-coming. Can't you give a man time to wash his hands?
Wash his hands? Land sakes, he's had time to take a whole bath, let alone wash his hands.
The way you nag, Marthy's enough to set a man's nerves on edge.
The way I nag? Mm. Well, my senses, Walt Santrell. You've been out in that there barn long enough to milk 40 cows instead of just two. Now sit down and eat your supper.
Who said I've been milking all the time? Agnes is sick. Man just can't sit around and let one of his critters suffer.
Well, it seems to me you haven't been doing much to help her. How much milk was there?
7 quarts.
7 quarts? Mm. My land. Walt, the thing to do is either call in Doc Halliday or get rid of Agnes. Now, we can't afford...
Listen. Sounds like Ed's drunk again. They're at it again. How she does put up with him, I don't
such
know.
Such neighbors. I declare, if I were Marion Blake, I'd do something about that there husband of hern. I declare I would. Any husband who beats his wife ought to be put away.
Oh, Ed's harmless. He's just a drunk and no-good bum. Listen to that, Martha.
I'm a-listening. My senses, I've been a-listening ever since Ed Blake brought that new wife of his into Mendon a year ago. And every time I boil inside, Walt, we ought to do something.
Now, it's none of our business. What can we do?
We can report to Constable Finn McNutt. That's what we can do.
Yeah, we did that once, and what good did it do?
Well, it did plenty of good. Finn talked to Ed, didn't he? Finn told him if it happened again, he'd take steps now, didn't he?
Steps? Marthy, you don't know about them things. But unless Marion registers a complaint, taking steps won't do no good.
Well, then I think that we...
Oh.
Walt Santrell, I'm going over there. I'm certainly not going to sit here and listen to that. Why, he'll kill the
poor... You sit still. It's none of your business. You keep your nose where it belongs.
I won't. I don't care if I don't know her very well. I'm a woman and she's a woman and it's my duty...
You sit still, I say. For all you know, she likes being beat up by her man. Some women are like that, to tell me.
Oh, if you could have seen that there little mite of a thing this morning, you wouldn't be talking such nonsense.
Seen her this morning? Did you see her?
I most certainly did. She come a-calling. Said she wanted to borrow some flour. But that was only an excuse. She knew it and I knew it. What she wanted to do was to talk.
What'd she talk about?
What do you think she talked about? She talked about her husband, of course. Mm. He's drunk more than half the time, she said. And when she tries to reason with him, he hits her. Oh, it's terrible. She doesn't know what to do. She's scared half to death, the poor little mite. Well, that settles it. I'm going over there. And if you're not man enough to come with me, Walt Santrell, you can just stay
here.
Now,
wait a minute. Don't get your dander up. I'll go along with you.
Well, come along, then. My lads, I've had all of this I can stand.
Marthy, this ain't none of our business.
Well, I'm making it my business. Go back home if you want to, Walt Santrell. I'm going to see to it.
All right. You talk too much. Ah, they're not here. Now, the best thing we can do is go along home and forget the whole business.
Not me. I started this thing and I'm going through with it. There. See? The door is open. That means they're home, don't it?
Well, why should it? Nobody in Mendon ever locks the doors. You're just using that as an excuse.
Oh, stop being so logical and keep quiet. Mrs. Blake? Oh, Mrs. Blake?
There's no one here now.
Now, be still.
Where are you going?
Out into the kitchen, of course. That's where the sounds come from, didn't they? Where else would I look?
Look? Look for what?
My goodness. Oh, Walt.
What's the matter? What are you staring at?
It's her. It's poor Mrs. Blake. Look at her lying there on the floor. He's knocked her unconscious. Oh, I knew he would. The brute.
Well, stop your jabbering and do something.
What shall I do? What can we do?
Get some water from the sink and a towel. Good heavens, woman, stop your blubbering.
Oh, that brute. The poor little creature.
Knocked out cold. Wonder what happened.
I'll get some ammonia. Just plain water. Walt, what's the matter?
We won't be needing ammonia, Marthy, or anything else. She's dead.
Bart, tell me just one thing. Are we up here to investigate a murder, or are we just out for the ride?
Well, let's say we're riding out to investigate a murder, Inspector.
Now, that's what I call a smart comeback. Yes, sir. That's a dilly.
Inspector, there used to be a day when you had a sense of humor. What happened to it?
I've still got it. Just say something funny.
All right. Have you heard the story about the man who at Christmas time asked his neighbor what he was going to get for his wife?
No.
No? Well, the neighbor replied, I don't know. I haven't had any offers. Here we are, Inspector. Not a very imposing-looking jail, is it?
Haven't had any offers. Now, let me see. How old was I the first time I heard that?
Yeah, come on, you old southwest. Don't pretend you've heard it before. Let's go in and have a talk with this Constable Finn McNutt.
Haven't had any offers
okay,
yet.
Okay, Inspector, you win. However,
hey.
I said... Oh, there's someone at the end of the porch. Let's go over, Inspector. It's probably Constable McNutt.
That guy must be 90. Don't tell me he's the constable of this town.
You fellas looking for someone?
Yes. Are you Constable Finn McNutt?
Huh? I can't hear you. I'm deaf as a headache.
Oh. I said we're looking for Constable Finn McNutt.
He ain't here.
Do you know when he'll be back?
Who?
McNutt.
What do you want to see him for?
I'm Barton Drake. This is Inspector Noah Danton.
Drake? Well, why didn't you say so? My name's McNutt. Finn McNutt. Hey, come on inside. I got something to show you.
Well, how do you like that, the deaf old coot?
Who's a deaf old coot? Don't you call me a deaf old coot, bub.
What? Well, I
ain't old and I ain't deaf. That's what I want to be. And by the way, which one of you gents is Inspector Danton?
Which one? Well, look, Gramp, if he's Drake, I must be Danton.
Oh, smart guy, huh? Well, I'm going to show you fellas you ain't so smart coming up here trying to show us county constables how dumb we are.
Wait a minute, we didn't...
Don't talk back to me, bub. You want to work on this case, you'll do as I say. Hear me?
By golly, in a minute...
You hear me?
Sure, I hear you, only...
All right, then. Talk when you're spoke to, not until. Now, which one of you gents is Drake?
I'm Drake, Mr. McNutt.
Oh, yeah. Well, why didn't you say so? Now, look here, Drake. I've been reading about you in the newspapers, you and that other feller. What's his name? Danton, Scranton, or some foreign name like that.
That does it, Bart. Are you going to tell this Billy Whiskers where to head in, or am I?
Eh? What was that? You got something to say, bub, speak up.
I'll speak up, all right. Now, listen, you long-whiskered...
Let's forget personal grievances for the moment and find out about this murder.
Murder? What murder? Who said there'd been a murder?
I did. It was in all the newspapers. Don't you ever read the papers? You ain't a fool of me, none. I know that's why you're here. Because I sent a clipping to Drake. And who dang well he couldn't stay away.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Bart, what is this? Did this joker send you a newspaper clipping?
Yes, he did, Inspector. I'm sorry, I forgot to mention it to you.
So that's it. You dragged me way up here on a two-bit murder case and
that
then...
That ain't why Drake come up here, bub. That ain't why at all, is it, Mr. Drake?
Well, no, as a matter of fact, it isn't.
You bet it isn't. Ain't, I mean... It's because I let the prisoner go, ain't it, Mr. Drake?
Yes, that's it. According to all the newspaper accounts, it was pretty well established that Ed Blake had beaten his wife to death. And then suddenly you allowed the prisoner to go free. Frankly, I'd like to know why.
I knew you'd ask me. I knew it.
Well, tell us.
You bet I'll tell you. I'll show you city fellas I ain't so dumb. I let Ed go because he ain't guilty, that's why.
Now, that's a simple enough answer, isn't it, Bart?
Why do you think Ed isn't guilty, Finn?
Because Marion Blake was poisoned, that's why.
Poisoned?
You bet she was. Look here. Here's what I wanted to show you. Take a look at that paper.
All right. I see. A medical report stating that Marion Blake died of arsenic poison.
That's right. That's what killed her, all right. Arsenic poisoning. That there paper proves it.
Well, this is very interesting, Mr. McNutt, but how did you know that... Say, wait a minute. This report is signed by F.T. McNutt, M.D., Is Dr. McNutt related to you, Constable?
Related? Why, doggone it, I'm him.
You're Dr. McNutt?
Sure I am, bub. I've been a doctor for 62 years. There's my certificate right there on the wall. Don't you have much truck with it, though. My hand's too shaky lately. Folks don't have confidence in the sawbones with a shaky hand. Spend most of my time these days being constable.
Well, cut off my bangs and call me Bob.
How's that, Junior?
Constable, I think I'm beginning to see what's behind all this. Being a doctor, you probably have some arsenic lying around your office.
That's it, Drake. I guess you were kind of smart at that.
Thank you.
Last week, some of that there arsenic was stole. Well, sir, the only one who's died around here in more than a year is Marion Blake.
So, you put two and two together, eh?
Yeah. Only in this case, two and two made five.
How was that?
Well, sir... I performed an autopsy, see?
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, Ms. Blake was dead of arsenic poisoning.
How does that make two and two equal five?
You keep quiet, Junior, and listen. You might learn something. The arsenic was stole one day and returned the next. During the time it was gone, Marion Blake was poisoned.
So you reasoned that whoever stole the arsenic decided to return it in the hopes that you wouldn't notice its brief absence,
Yeah, maybe. Hey, Drake, And, Ricky, you want to know what made me suspicious in the first place, eh?
Yes, man, I would.
Well, sir, it's simple. Ed Blake wasn't in no condition to beat his wife to death, that's why.
Why wasn't he?
Because he was skunk drunk, that's why. Because he wasn't at home when them Santrells said they heard him beating her, that's why.
He wasn't at home. Are you sure?
You're dang tootin', I'm sure. Ed Blake was asleep right here in my office from 6 o'clock that night till midnight.
We'll continue with Mystery is My Hobby in just a moment. For longtime radio fans, it's no surprise that the rise of radio in the late 1920s and 1930s roughly corresponded to the rise in the number of popular weekly, bi-weekly, and monthly magazines available to the public. Both outlets were a godsend for writers, particularly during the Great Depression, in that both demanded an endless supply of short fiction of all types, written to quickly grab the attention of readers and listeners. By the 1940s, there were literally hundreds of local, national, and institutional magazines regularly buying the fictional short stories of writers, as well as any number of radio series constantly in search of new material in the most popular genres. The qualities required for a good magazine short story were roughly similar to those required for radio: familiar or at least identifiable character types, a setting that was either recognizable to most listeners or easily defined with a few descriptive words, distinctive music or provocative sound effects, get-to-the-point plots that were intriguing but not overly complex, an opening sequence that, either through action, dialogue, or situation, quickly grabbed interest, and a reading or running time that wouldn't exceed 30 or 60 minutes. Stories from all of the major genres were needed – romances, westerns, high adventure, humor – but the most popular and most enduring genre was the mystery story, as regularly featured in periodicals such as Mammoth Detective, True Detective, and Dime Detective magazine. On radio, aside from series based on specific characters like Sherlock Holmes and Ellery Queen, the bulk of the mystery stories adapted for the medium were first aired on the popular anthology shows like Suspense, Mole Mystery Theater, and Murder at Midnight, just to name a few. A longtime staple of radio entertainment, mystery shows always attracted large numbers of listeners, particularly when aired in time slots between 10 p.m. and midnight, with a combination of action, suspense, and the unexplained. Some programs, such as the Radio Reader's Digest and the Front Page Drama, which took its stories from the American Weekly magazine, readily credited the original source of their stories. Others simply offered author credit. But it was clear that a good story was a good story, whether in print or on the air, and many a scribe receiving two checks rather than one appreciated the chance to profit twice from their labors. All of the major networks aired mysteries, but the diverse Mutual Radio Network led the way in terms of sheer numbers of mystery shows created and aired. There were three primary motivations for this: popularity, expense, and redistribution. Mystery shows were always popular, so even the simplest series would usually attract some sort of audience. In terms of cost, mysteries were relatively inexpensive to produce, in that they featured small casts, few if any stars, a skilled organist to provide spooky music, and one or two on-staff sound effects technicians to get the plot across. For Mutual, redistribution via post-network syndication was a major financial consideration. Unlike CBS, ABC, or NBC, which offered their live programs via closed-circuit lines to affiliate stations, Mutual was a network of primarily small stations in small markets, some of which were out of range of radio-quality phone lines. For these affiliates, Mutual would often record their New York or Los Angeles-based series, edit out the commercials and time-specific references, and then send them in syndication packages to their stations on 16-inch vinyl discs. This not only provided the stations with network-quality programming, but also allowed them to pay a flat fee for the shows and sell the commercial time to a local advertiser at a profit. For Mutual, a two-season live series that would have otherwise been broadcast and forgotten could continue to generate revenue for years to come, which is exactly the case with the show Mystery is My Hobby.
That's it, Drake. You find out who stole that arsenic and how it was given to Marion Blake, and I'll pay you $1,000, cash money.
Well, this is rather unusual, Constable, being offered money by the police department.
It ain't being offered by the police department.
No?
Being offered by me, personal.
I see.
Soon as folks find out the facts in this case, they're going to figure it was me that murdered Marion.
Figure it was you who murdered her?
Why, sure. Ed and me hated each other. Everybody knows that. He claims I killed a cow of his'n that I tried to doctor once. Said the critter was a purebred, and I owed him $2,000.
So last week he got drunk and came over to your office and tried to collect it, hmm? Is that right, Constable?
That's it. We had some words, and the folks gathered around outside. I ups and arrest Ed for disturbing the peace. And how about it, Drake? You want that $1,000, or don't you?
I'll take the case, Constable, but not because I think you intend paying me $1,000. Frankly, my only purpose will be to satisfy my own curiosity as to why you've gone to all this trouble to tell us such a deliberate lie.
Well, I declare, Mr. Drake, I don't know what Finn McNutt is talking about, I'm sure. I think he must be getting senile.
So, why do you say that, Mrs. Centrell?
Why? Well, my goodness, Mr. Drake, Walt and I ain't deaf. We know when we hear something.
Then you still insist that you heard sounds of a struggle in the Blake's kitchen on the night you found her dead.
Well, my land.
Now, look here, Drake. Of course we heard it. We've been hearing it for almost a year. What could possibly be the object in us both lying to you?
That's what puzzles me.
It doesn't puzzle me.
Hmm?
That Billy Whiskers constable was thinking him up as he went along.
But why, Inspector? Why would he make up such a cock and bull story? He knew we could check it easy enough.
Yeah, that's right. And to make it worse, he's willing to pay us $1,000 to prove he's a liar.
What? What was that you said, Inspector Dunn?
I said that McNutt offered us $1,000 to prove him a liar.
Oh, my senses. That certainly is funny, $1,000.
Well, what's funny about it?
Just a minute, Inspector. Mrs. Santrell, you mentioned a minute ago that Mrs. Blake called on you the morning of the murder.
Yes. She said she'd come to borrow some flour, but I knew that was only an excuse. She talked about that husband of hers the whole time.
Come along, Inspector. Let's go over and have a talk with Ed Blake.
It must be Ed Blake splitting wood out in his backyard.
Oh, yes. Let's go over. Good afternoon. Are you Ed Blake?
Yeah, that's right. Guess you two are Drake and Danton. Been expecting you.
News gets around in these small towns, doesn't it?
Mr. Blake, I guess you know why we're here.
Yeah, Ben told me. Personally, I think you're wasting your time. Marion committed suicide. Ben thinks otherwise. As long as he does, I'm willing to help out by answering your questions.
What makes you say your wife committed suicide, Mr. Blake?
That's a personal matter, and it's none of your business.
Thought you were going to answer our question.
Never mind, Inspector. I think I know the answer. Blake, if your wife had committed suicide, there'd be a box or some sort of container lying nearby which held the arsenic she used. Did you find any such container?
I don't know.
The arsenic was stolen from Finn McNutt's office, and later the unused portion was returned there. Finn says you were asleep in his office from 6 o'clock until midnight.
Finn say that?
Didn't we just tell you he said it?
I don't know whether you fellas are trying to trick me or not. I don't know if it makes any difference. Finn probably thought he'd help me by lying. Poor old guy.
You mean you weren't in the office all the time?
No. Around 7, I got up and went out to look for another bottle.
Where'd you look?
Not out here, if that's what you're thinking. I didn't come near this house all that day or evening.
Oh, just a minute. We've got two witnesses who'll swear they heard you and your wife fighting.
Who are they? Walt and Martha Santrell? They're always hearing things.
Their testimony in court will carry a lot of weight, Blake.
No more than my witnesses. I got witnesses who'll testify I wasn't anywhere near this house at the time of Santrell said they heard me beating up my wife.
Who are they?
I'll produce them when the time
You'll
comes.
You'll produce them now unless you want to be arrested for the murder of your wife.
That's so? Who's going to arrest me?
I am.
Not without Finn McNutt's permission. Finn's got charge of this case, and it just happens he knows I didn't murder nobody.
You're pretty sure of yourself, aren't you?
Sure I am. Here comes Finn now. You can ask him if he wants you to arrest me.
I'm going to ask him plenty of things.
I wouldn't, Inspector. I think we're going to find that Mr. McNutt is a lot smarter than we gave him credit.
Hello there. Hello, Mr. McNutt. How are you?
Howdy, Drake. Hello, Ed.
Hiya, Finn.
Who's that there, feller?
Now, don't give us that routine again, Longbeard. You know darn well who I am.
Well, dang my eyes, if it ain't old Gumshoe Scranton. Well, Drake, you got everything fixed up?
Yes, I think so, Finn.
Know who done it, huh?
Beyond the shadow of a doubt, Finn.
I figured you would. I'm sorry I had to pull a couple of fast ones to help things along. I guess you and me understand each other, though, don't we?
We're beginning to, I'm sure.
You betcha. Well, let's get over to the Sand Trails and let them know how smart I am.
Well, my senses, this is certainly turning into quite an affair, ain't it?
Sorry we had to bother you again, Mrs. Santrell, but Finn seems to think you'd both be interested in the final outcome of the case.
I don't get it. What's the idea, Finn?
Oh, let Drake tell you. Me, I'm just an old hick cop that don't know nothing.
You can say that again, Gramp.
All right, I will. I don't know nothing. Now, Drake, you tell him, boy.
All right, I'll do my best, Finn. Look, Blake, do you still insist that you weren't at your house between 6 o'clock and midnight on the night of the murder?
Sure I do. And if the Santrells say any different, they're crazy.
Why, the idea, the very idea. You were there, Ed Blake. We heard you.
Yeah.
Why, we could have heard you if you'd been a mile away.
Now, wait a minute. Are you sure you heard Blake, Mrs. Santrell? Or did you just hear Mrs. Blake?
Just hear Marion?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you mean.
Sure, we heard Ed. We both heard him.
Wait a minute now, Walt. Wait a minute. I think Mr. Drake's got something there. Now, just let me think a moment.
What do you mean, got something? We heard him, I tell you.
No, we didn't.
Hmm.
I remember now. No, sir, we didn't. All we heard was Marion begging Ed not to hit her. And then we heard some furniture being knocked over. Well, I declare.
I don't blame you for being surprised, Mrs. Santrell. It would be only natural for you to assume that Ed Blake was beating his wife when she kept screaming and begging him not to. Blake, tell me, did you ever strike your wife at all?
Yeah. Once.
So?
The time I found out she was seeing Walt Santrell's secret.
What was that, Ed Blake?
Your husband was not only carrying on a romance with Marion Blake behind your back, Mrs. Santrell, but he had ample time to administer the poison to her while he was supposed to be out caring for a sick cow.
That's a lie. I didn't give her the poison. Why should I? I was in love with her.
Oh, Walt.
It was Ed who gave her the poison. It must have been.
How could it have been? He was asleep in the constable's office all the time.
No, he wasn't. Marthy went down to get Finn after we discovered Marion's body. And there wasn't anyone in Finn's office. Was there, Marthy? Was there?
No. There wasn't anyone there.
No.
I got to stick by you, Walt, even though...
So there wasn't anyone there, eh? Not even Gramp here.
That's right, Junior. I'm in it, too. It could have been me. Could have. Had plenty of chance. I told you folks would think I did it.
Well, did you?
Never you mind. Go on, Drake. Needle him, boy. Needle him.
Are you quite sure there was no one in the constable's office when you got there after the murder, Mrs. Santrell?
Yes, I'm sure. I'll testify in court if necessary. If it'll prove Walt innocent.
I see. Now, if no one were there, you had an opportunity to return the partly used box of arsenic, didn't you?
What did you say? What was that?
You wondered how you were going to get it back, didn't you, Mrs. Santrell? You certainly didn't want such incriminating evidence found in your possession, and you were afraid that Finn might notice the box was missing if you kept it too long. Then came a golden opportunity when you went running for the police to investigate a murder that you yourself had committed.
You don't mean... You can't
Oh,
mean.
Yes, I do mean, Mrs. Santrell. Another golden opportunity came to you when Marion Blake came over to borrow some flour. It solved a real problem, didn't it?
Marthy, you didn't...
Say, that's an angle. By golly.
You keep quiet there, Gramp. Let Drake pay it off. Go ahead, boy.
You loaned Marion Blake the flour, didn't you, Mrs. Santrell? You put arsenic in it. You knew she'd never notice it, or that there was any likelihood of anyone guessing how the poison had been administered.
Is it true, Marthy? Is it?
Yes, it's true, Walt. I put the arsenic in the flour. I knew she'd make biscuits. I knew Ed was drunk and wouldn't be home. I knew about you and Marion. I thought you'd be over there eating supper with her. You have before. I watched you. I wanted you both to die. I wanted you both to die. And then I wanted to die myself.
Ah!
Our story concludes in just a moment.
Bart, slow down.
Hmm? What's the matter, Inspector?
See that sign? Mm-hmm. I want to take a good look at it. It says, leaving Menden. Come back and see us again. Only I'm not coming back.
You're still a little hot under the collar, Inspector?
No, I'm not hot under the collar. Only these country cops get in my hair.
You'll have to admit that Finn McNutt was pretty smart, Inspector.
Smart my foot. All he was the doggondest liar I ever ran across.
Everyone in Menden seemed to do pretty well at throwing whoppers.
Yeah. Imagine those Santrells cooking up that story about hearing their next-door neighbors fighting.
Yeah, that wasn't a cooked-up story, Inspector. Martha Santrell actually did think Blake was beating up his wife.
But Santrell knew that Marion Blake was putting on an act, eh?
Exactly. It would have provided excellent grounds for divorce, Inspector, since both Santrell and Martha would have sworn they heard the beatings, see?
Ah, me, what lengths some people go to get rid of their spouses.
Yes, they certainly do, Inspector.
And that's another thing I can't figure. If Constable Longbeard was so smart, what did he want us in on the case for? Why didn't he just go out and arrest Martha Santrell?
But he didn't know that Martha Santrell was guilty, Inspector. He only knew that Marion Blake had died of arsenic poison, and that scared him.
Scared him?
Yes. Remember, his job as constable was virtually honorary. And Ed Blake had already been arrested for his wife's murder.
McNutt didn't want to stick his chin out,
That's
eh?
It, Inspector. He had his pride. And he didn't want to lose his job as constable. It was his only source of income. He knew people would laugh at him if he tried to sell anyone the idea that Marion Blake had been poisoned.
But he figured a couple of city cops had swallowed it hook, line, and sinker, eh?
Well, he kidded us into taking the job, Inspector. He had enough evidence to prove his poisoning theory, but not enough to convict anyone. You've got to admit he was clever about it.
Oh, sure, sure, I'll admit it.
Good for you, Inspector.
Only I'd give my badge for a chance to go back there and pull his whiskers.
I think he'd let you do it, too. He was so pleased with the way things turned out.
Yeah, I'll bet. He was kind of cute at that.
Yeah,
you know what he said just before we left?
Well, I know he apologized to you for all the cracks he'd made. He said he tried to make us both mad so we'd stick around and pull his chestnuts out of the fire.
I don't mean that. I mean...
Oh, you mean when he yelled after us that from now on his new slogan was going to be, Mystery is my hobby.
Thanks for listening to this week's Retro Radio Sunday episode of Weird Darkness. If you haven't done so yet, be sure to subscribe or follow the podcast so you don't miss future episodes. And if you like the show, please share it with someone you know who also loves old-time radio and pulp audio. If you want to hear even more, drop an email to weirddarkness@radioarchives.com and get an instant reply with links to download full-length pulp audiobooks, pulp ebooks, and old-time radio shows absolutely free. That's weirddarkness@radioarchives.com. Weird Darkness is a production and trademark of Marler House Productions. Copyright Weird Darkness 2023. I'm Darren Marler, and I'll see you next week for Weird Darkness's Retro Radio Sunday.